going to continue with our study on the Ten Commandments. So we'll be on page 25. We're going to finish up lesson number 7, which has to do with honoring parents. And in keeping with Zeke's mode of operation, I like it myself, is to kind of review. So what is the first commandment? No other gods. The second? No idols, no images. The third? Don't take God's name in vain. Keep the Lord's name holy. The fourth? Okay, keep the Sabbath day holy. No work on the Sabbath day. And then tonight is the fifth, honoring parents. So, why is this law about honoring parents? How is that important with regard to our relationship with God? Okay. Yeah, it teaches us authority. As a child, who's your first authority figure? Is it God? Right, it's parents. A child doesn't know about God yet. They have to be taught that, introduced that. So in the beginning, their authority figure is the parents. So that's why it's very important for the parents to teach this to their children. You think about our relationship with God. What is our relationship with God? He's our
Father.
Right, our Father. And the same with Christ. Christ is the Son of God. So He has the Father as well. So this is a very important relationship in God's plan. And just to continue reviewing this lesson, he says there's two consequences commandment given in Exodus 20 and then again in Deuteronomy 5. There's two consequences mentioned that if you keep this commandment, if you honor your parents, what will happen? That he tells the Israelites. Yeah, your days will be long. And what was the second one? Yeah, things will be well with you in the land. Okay? So there are benefits, obviously. And then what was the punishment for children who did not honor their parents? Okay, death. It talks about if you curse father or mother, if you don't honor them, it says, or if you strike them, you will be put to death. That was the command in the Old Testament. And then on page 25 there in the middle, he talks about that there were three different opportunities for us when we follow this command. Does anybody remember one of those? Or any of those? The commandment gives opportunity for God's people to do what? Yeah, show holiness. Because God says, be holy as I am holy. And then the next verse when he says that, he says, revere your father and mother. Okay, in addition to holiness, what else can we do for our parents? Opportunity for obedience. Yeah, obedience. To submit to that authority. And then the third one was to be receptive to both instruction and correction. And then, of course, we can talk about why does God correct us? Because He loves us. Same with our earthly parents, and that's why we need to honor them, because they instruct us, they correct us, they discipline us because of their love for us. That's what we learn in Hebrews chapter 12. It says God chastens those whom He loves. Okay, now we'll go on to page 26, and we'll start on this is where we left off last week, talking about the commandment now. So he mentions that as time passes, the relationship between parent and child changes. So what changes in the parent and child relationship? What changes can you think of as time goes on? Okay, maturity. Okay, yeah, very good. So we want to see that progression happen as they mature and they grow in their relationship with us and with God. What else changes? Okay. Their responsibility changes. Their relationship with us in terms of authority changes to a certain extent. I mean, we no longer, once they move away, They're no longer under our authority. But what does not change? Okay, the respect. Yeah, this command about honoring your parents, which honor and respect go together, that doesn't change. So we still honor and respect our parents. Even though we're not under their authority, we should still honor and respect them. Let's see. The first thing he talks about, three different areas. He talks about the young family. So when the child is young, they're under the parental care and authority. And let's read Ephesians 6, 1 to 3. Does somebody want to read Ephesians 6, verses 1 to 3 for us? Okay. So he references that commandment. He says, you know, this is the commandment, and he mentions there is a promise associated with it that things may go well with you. So he tells the children, you know, obey your parents. So as parents, what does this tell us is one of our primary responsibilities with regard to raising our child? What do we need to teach them? Yeah, to obey. So, you know, there's lots of different theories and practices going around today on how you should raise your child. Well, I would just caution you that whatever method you choose, it needs to result in the child learning to obey the parent. To submit to their authority, and in turn, they will learn to obey God. So, you know, that has to be one of the primary goals of your parenting, is to teach your child that. Right, right. I think it's going to be harder for the child to respect you and look to you for instruction and all that if you're not teaching this, if you're not showing them the authority and showing them the discipline and correcting them and doing all that out of your love for them. Okay. Anything else on that topic? I guess we should mention, if we read Ephesians 6:4, it says, "And you fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." So just as a side note, we should mention the fathers, this is your primary role. You are the ones given the responsibility to make sure your child is raised in this regard. So take that very seriously. Okay. He also mentions on page 27, there's two ways that the youngsters or the children can respect this authority. And they have to do with the transmitter and receiver, as some people call it, in the communication. What's the two different ways they need to show this respect for authority? Yep. First one is to listen. The child needs to learn to listen to the parent. Let's read Proverbs 19:20. Proverbs 19:20. Okay. And, you know, I think it was earlier in this lesson, we talked a lot about the Proverbs chapter 1, chapter 2, chapter 3. I think we went on to several chapters where it talks about the father and the mother giving instruction, giving wisdom, and the children should listen to that. So this is just another reference to that same concept that, you know, children should listen to their parents and listen to their wisdom. They know more than the child, and that's where they're going to learn about God. Okay, so in addition to listening, what's the other part of communication? What does the child need to do? In the transmitting section. Yeah, watch how you speak to your parents, right? And that's, of course, true for adults as well. Anybody with a parent, when you speak to your parent, you need to do so respectfully and in a way that would honor them. So, you know, that's something we need to keep in mind. He mentions Ephesians 4:29, where it talks about let no corrupt communication proceed out of your mouth. That's not necessarily talking about the parent-child relationship, but of course it applies. You know, and so as parents, you need to teach your children that, you know, the way they speak, the tone, the words they use, even their expression all makes a difference. You know, that starts out when they're very, very young, right? You know, if to me, if you allow them at that point to scream and yell for whatever they want and you give it to them, then you're teaching them that's a good way to communicate, you know, because you got what you wanted. So, you know, I don't think that's a good way to let that happen. Yeah, you have to speak, you know, properly to them if you want them to model that back for you. Right. Yeah, so you definitely want to foster communication with your child and be receptive to their questions and, you know, and if they have problems, you know, you certainly want them to talk to you about them. So that's a good point. Okay, the next portion is the empty nest. Talks about in time, children leave their parents to establish their own household. So, you know, leave to go off to school or leave to get a job or whatever. So, how can children honor their parents when they leave? What's the way they can do that? Okay, yeah, so the child can still help the parent if they need the help. Right, right. You hope that they take that instruction and that wisdom you gave them, they apply it, they, you know, live a faithful life, they grow spiritually, they are a good example, you know, they're making the right choices, so, you know, you hope all that for them, of course, and that's what all that instruction and training and examples were all about, and all that communication was to make that happen. As Zane says, you want to see that mature as you go, and, you know, you kind of gradually let them make decisions as they get older so they can make the right decisions once they move out. So that's all part of the plan. Yeah, that, I'm glad you mentioned finding their own faith, because obviously that's the thing you want to teach them the most, is how they can grow in their own faith, develop their own faith in God, and not just do all the things that we do or that they see us do just because we're doing them and just because they had to tag along, but because they truly have a relationship with God and they want to be in that relationship with Him. Okay, let me see. Anything else? Okay, then the last one was the golden years. Aging parents frequently need special attention from their children. So he mentions that Paul taught the adult children responsibility to care for their parents when they needed it. Let's turn to 1 Timothy 5 and read several verses there. 1 Timothy 5. If somebody could read verse 4. Okay. So does this tell us we have a responsibility to parents when they leave? I mean, later in life? Yes. And grandparents as well. It says to repay them. Why should we repay them? Yeah, they spent not only money but time and, you know, all kinds of sacrifices they made for us. So it's only acceptable and fair that we should do the same for them. Let's read verse 8. Somebody read 1 Timothy 5, verse 8. Okay, so that's pretty strong language there that we have the responsibility to care for our family. Even, you know, we've moved out and we don't live with them and, you know, we don't have to pay their bills, we think, but if that comes down to it, then we need to step in and do that, because it says if we do not, then we have denied the faith and we're worse than an unbeliever. Okay, let's read verse 16. Okay. So we can't just turn it over to the church. We can't just say, oh, well, they'll take care of it, right? Because this says if we have the ability, we should do that. We should help them. And that way the church is not burdened with that problem. Because you are a family member. You should take care of your family. Remember, we're talking about relationship that God established, and He tells us to honor our parents. So this is a God-given instruction that we should be following. Yes, yes, that's very true. You know, and I think as, you know, and I've seen situations where, you know, there's several children and a parent or parents that need help. You know, all the children need to try to do what they can. I know sometimes some live distance, some live close, so it's difficult for everybody to do the same, but there needs to be some support from all children, I think, in those situations, even though it may be difficult. So, you need to find a way to help out the best way you can. That's true. There can be benefits to having, you know, an older person around, and for your children to have that relationship with them, you know, instead of them living far away if they have to or whatever, so. Oh, I was going to mention, you know, he mentions here Matthew 15, verses 3 through 6. Let's turn there. This is Christ talking about this topic. I'll read Matthew 15, verses 3 through 6. Jesus says, "Why do you also transgress the commandment of God because of your tradition? For God commanded, saying, 'Honor your father and your mother,' and 'He who curses father or mother, let him be put to death.' But you say, 'Whoever says to his father or mother, whatever profit you might have received from me is a gift of God, or gift to God, then he need not honor his father or mother.' Thus you have made the commandment of God of no effect by your tradition." So from what I read on this, the Jews had a tradition where they would say, you know, okay, I'm gonna bequeath or give all my property and belongings to, you know, the temple or whatever, to the God. They didn't actually do it yet, but they said, you know, this is gonna go to God. And then when their parents needed something, they'd say, well, this is already, you know, dedicated to God. I can't take away what I've given to God and give it to you. So that was how they got out of the responsibility of taking care of their children. And Jesus tells them, you know, you're a hypocrite for doing that, that you're not following the commandment of God to honor your father and mother. So I thought that was very interesting. And then what did Jesus do for his mother to make sure she was taken care of? Yes, when he was on the cross, and Mary was there, and his mother was there, and then disciple John was there, he told John to take care of his mother. So he even had that on his mind at that point. Okay, anything else on this? I like the summary he gives at the bottom, page 27. The family, God's original institution, is special, and it's right that we show love, respect, care, and concern for our parents in all stages of life. Okay, let's look at the questions on page 28. What is Jesus' example regarding his earthly parents? Let's read Luke 2:51. Can somebody read Luke 2:51? Okay, so what do we see Jesus doing here? Okay, so he's remaining submissive and obedient to his parents. And, you know, contrast that with what he said in verse 49, where when they came looking for him, saying, well, hey, why weren't you following us out of town? You know, this is when they all went to visit the temple, and he stayed behind talking in the temple with the priests and everybody, and they started on their journey back, and he wasn't with them. They went back and found him, and he said, did you not know that I must be about my father's business? So, obviously, he knew his role as the Son of God and the Savior, but it wasn't time for him to leave yet, so he still was subject to his parents. If you think about it here, he is the Son of God. He can do whatever he wants, right? He's got all authority and all power, but he still honored his parents, which, is a great example for us. Yeah, it seemed like he did that at her request. When she asked him to turn the water to wine. Okay, number 13. What other ways are there to honor parents? Besides the ones we've mentioned, I guess. Yeah, and it doesn't hurt to thank them every so often, right? With words or hugs or cards or phone calls or whatever to remember that. What else can we do to honor our parents? Okay, good. Yeah, be inclusive. Keep your parents involved in everything and help. Ask for their help. Okay, what else? Okay. Yeah, it's hard to find ways to help them, and sometimes they don't want it or don't want you to, you know, spend your money or your time on them. But yeah, that's good. We need to still show them our love. Okay. Yeah, I mean, if you do have parents that are problematic, divisive, it makes it a challenge, but, you know, I think you still have to do what you can to honor them, to try to have the best relationship you can. Yeah. And, you know, the relationship may be reduced, or you may have to measure what you do with them, you know, restrict it to certain areas where it's less problematic, you know. Obviously, you have to talk about the details, you know, to get down to the nitty gritty, but, you know, I think we still have the responsibility. Anybody else have any other ideas? Okay, this is number 14. How does the lack of respect in the home eventually play a larger role in society's problems? If you don't have respect for somebody who raised you, took care of you, who did all these things for you, you're not going to have respect for anybody else, likely. So it does lead to problems in society. Okay. Let's go on to lesson number 8, page 29. How much more time do we have, Dane? Okay. So this one has to do with the sixth commandment, do not murder. So what's the very first physical death we read about in the Bible? Okay, Cain and Abel. Cain murdering his brother Abel. And this commandment, talking about do not murder, that word is specific to murder. It's not a word like kill, as if you were, you know, to kill an animal or to put to death somebody that the courts found guilty. It has to do with, let me find my notes here. It has to do with unlawful and malicious or premeditated killing of one human being by another. So it's talking about that type of killing, it's the word murder. And why is this such a bad thing? What is special that man should not kill another man? What's special about man? Okay, made in the image of God. What else does Genesis 2 tell us God did for us? He breathed life into us. So we have God's spirit in us in a way. So, you know, in Job 33:4, he said, the Spirit of God has made me, and the breath of the Almighty gives me life. So, you know, you're dishonoring God you're in His territory when you start killing other people maliciously and unlawfully. Let's turn to Matthew 19:18. If somebody would read Matthew 19:18, again, Jesus mentions this commandment. Okay, so it's the same, and this word in the New Testament is a Greek word that, again, is about murder, not just general killing. So it's a special significance. So he mentions that before we look into the commandment, he said there's three things we should consider. The first one is the meaning of the word. We've talked about that. That it's got to do with murder, malicious, unlawful killing. And then on page 30, he says, consider that God has sovereignty over life and death. So, let's see Job 1:21. Somebody would read that and see what Job said when he lost his children. Probably most of you know it by heart anyway. Somebody read 1:21. Okay, so the Lord gives life and the Lord takes away life. So it's not our purview to do that. So let's also read Deuteronomy 32:39. I'll read that one. Deuteronomy 32:39. I'll read it. Now see that I, even I, am He, and there is no God besides me. I kill and I make alive. I wound and I heal. Nor is there any who can deliver from my hand. So I think that's God's way of saying, I'm the one who gives life. I'm the one who takes away life. It's nobody else's space to do that. And another one I wanted to mention is 1 Samuel chapter 2. This is Hannah when she's praying to God after being blessed by a son. 1 Samuel 2 verse 6. I'll read that. The Lord kills and makes alive. He brings down to the grave and brings up. So the Lord is the one who takes care of life, not anybody else. And then the third one is, he says that, consider that God explains why some people should be killed. And the first verse there is Genesis 9 verses 3 to 6. Every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. I have given you all things, even as the green herbs. But you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. Surely for your lifeblood I will demand a reckoning. From the hand of every beast I will require it, from the hand of man. From the hand of every man's brother I will require the life of man. So he says, if a man takes somebody's life, I will require that man's blood at the hand of another man. So that's something we'll continue on with number 3 on page 30 in the next class. Thank you.